If you had TCU plus 57 last night, you're a loser.
Yeah, I didn't have TCU. I didn't have TCU at all. I had Georgia in the game. That is the point. I didn't expect it to be like that. I thought TCU would certainly score. I didn't think it would be as easy for Georgia to score as it was. I thought that they had some creative plays. But, man, the overreaction of one game is something else. It's kind of ridiculous. It doesn't take away from the year that TCU had or the fact that they beat Michigan last week. And it doesn't, to me, mean that Georgia is that much more dominant than, say, Ohio State was last week. You know, I mean, that was a game that easily they could have lost just based on the kick. I think if it had been Ohio State and TCU, we wouldn't have had maybe the same quite dominance, but I think we'd still have Ohio State winning. But I feel bad for TCU that it was such a good season and it's kind of ruined by this and it's all this. You know who texted me last night after not texting me for about 10 days? Aggie Dave wanting to bandwagon on for Georgia's success, which is a bunch of bull bleep, man. That SEC is it's a tough conference, but Georgia is by far the top team in that league. And I don't think everybody else takes success for that. Doesn't talk about how tough the SEC was this year, this, that, or the other. I think there are some good teams in there. But I think, again, Ohio State, to me, played right there with Georgia this season. TCU is good in a balanced Big 12. I think that's what we have to call it, right? I wouldn't have thought there would have been any team in the Big 12 that would have made it to the championship game this year or win a playoff game. I think we had these conversations during the year. Is there a Big 12 team that can make it to the playoff? Maybe. Could they win a playoff game? Absolutely not. TCU did that. So I think you got to just be careful of looking at one game and then deciding everything off of that.
Yeah, I agree, Mark. Like Pat said, they could play 10 times and the result's going to be the same.
Well, Pat picked TCU. What the hell? I would have asked him that yesterday. I mean, I know he doesn't want to criticize coaches, but he was the one that thought that there'd at least, I guess it would have been a divine situation or a miracle if he thought Georgia had that much better players. Then why did he pick TCU to win the game? I don't get that. Yeah, I don't think it was.
To me, it wasn't. College football, that's the beauty of it, right, Mark? You only get the ones, like in the NFL, they're going to play a bunch of times, and so we'll find out over time. But in college, I mean, you get your one shot, and, you know, TCU had their one shot last night and didn't do anything with it. But when Michigan had their one shot against TCU won a playoff game, like you said. They earned their way into that top four. All those other teams had a chance, you know, Tennessee, Alabama, whoever, Penn State, Washington. I mean, they all had a chance to get into the top four. These four made it. TCU beat Michigan, so you got to give them credit for that much. People just want to throw that out and act like TCU didn't even deserve to be there.
Right. I made plenty of bad picks, but I don't know that this game would be, I don't think at all it would be this lopsided every time that they played. And maybe if Georgia and Ohio State played, most of those results would be Georgia winning comfortably. I don't know. I'm not here to tell you that I don't think Georgia's the best team at college football, but I do know that certain days and certain performances, teams play better than at other times. I mean, that's how you explain that Georgia almost lost to Missouri this year. So they did save their best, and I'm with you. I give credit for Kirby Smart for having his team ready and coaching hard last week after that game. There wasn't any kind of celebration of getting there, and I think for TCU, last week's game may have been more important than this week's game. And I don't know if that sounds right, but just the fact that they were able to win one, they may have kind of exhaled while Georgia knew that there was a bigger game coming this week. So TCU not as good as Georgia. There really wasn't anything they could do. The three-man rush never worked. I would have jumped out of that at the beginning. And I do like Gillespie. I think he's a really good defensive coach. But they needed to get extra pressure. A couple of times they did get extra pressure. And that, you know, that one, TCU's best linebacker comes on a blitz on the edge. And I don't know what he's looking at, but he gets beat inside. Just a basically plie by just a turnaround move by Stetson Bennett, and he runs for 40 yards because there's nobody back there. It was TCU played really, really bad.
I'm with you. I thought coaching, I was surprised that Pat just wrote me on, you know, and said coaching had nothing to do with this, had zero to do with coaching. I do think coaching had something to do with it. I do think Kirby had his guys really ready to play. You could tell from his interview in the post game, all right, after the Ohio State, after they escaped there. This was going to be a different mindset for Georgia, and I think coaching had a lot to do with it. I think some of the scheming had a lot to do with it. some of the play calling, and I think that Georgia was ready for what TCU threw at them, and TCU was not ready for what Georgia threw at them. Yes, there was a great talent disparity, but I don't think you can just throw out coaching and say it had nothing to do with it.
Oh man, they had one of the deep balls to Bowers. They ran a guy on a slant, and it kind of got the safety's attention, and he goes with that guy. Then the corner comes up, but the safety sees the running back coming out of the backfield and comes up. The corner's gone with the guy on the slant.
Then
you've got a second. You got basically two throws wide open to go underneath or deep. I mean, those are really good plays. I do think that Todd Monken is a star. He's a really good coach. I think he's got a good personality. I think he's really good at coordinating the offense. I think it was a great hire by Kirby Smart to bring him in, because in the past they'd kind of been a very conservative, traditional offense. And again, that's what I think a defensive coach was comfortable with as the head coach. And the difference in Georgia, I think, in their ascension has been that Kirby Smart has let Todd Monken. Todd Monken be able to do what he wants to do with the offense at times. I think Monken would throw it every down. I think he's like kind of out of the Traber philosophy. But, maybe they bring out the best in each other.
Did you hear him talking about the relationship between Stetson Bennett and Monken after the game last night? And they said it was like a love-hate relationship, that they have. But, man, when it's right, it was – I mean, they were hitting on all cylinders last night. And here's Stetson Bennett. By all accounts, even by their own accounts, Kirby Smart, told him, hey, he wasn't good enough to play there, and he transfers and goes to junior college and comes back as walk-on. Then they say, no, you're a third-teamer, and he says, I'm better than that. Then they talk about how he's gone back and forth with Monken. But I think, that Kirby Smart and Monken are both guilty for not believing in Stetson Bennett, but he's proven both of them wrong too. So,
well, they got a lot around him, and I think that's the reason why it works. Talked about yesterday, their offensive line was a Moore Award nominee, a ton of experience. The running game, I thought, was the big difference last night in that, Georgia's running game, TCU couldn't stop it. And
254.
They couldn't stop anything. Couldn't stop anything last night. And I do think Kendrian Miller would have been a difference for TCU. He's a much better back than DeMarcado. And TCU, the turnover, three turnovers in the first half added to this, right?
Yes.
If it's plus three the other way, then I think we have a much, much different result last night. So everything that could go, this is like the Oklahoma State game to me at Kansas State. Almost everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And that's how you get a result like that. It's Kansas State 49 to nothing better than OSU? No. But that's how things like that happen.
And TCU only rushed for 36 yards.
No, yeah, they can't run the ball,
Marcus. And we even talked about it some yesterday. If Georgia was going to be able to shut down the TCU running game, then all bets are off, because Duggan, they were just turning them loose on Duggan, right? They didn't have to worry about a running game at all, and poor Duggan had no chance. Now, I will say, I thought he was just about as bad as I've ever seen. I mean, he, from the word go, which on that very first play after they had the false start, he had all day to throw and then scrambled away and had a guy wide open, could have been, who knows, 40, 50 yards, and just totally missed him. But he did miss two or three guys that we just passes that we haven't seen him miss this year.
Yeah, that's right. He didn't play well, but I think they also did a really good job of taking away Quentin Johnston.
Yes. And Tay Barber, yeah.
Well, they took away everyone. But Johnston is...
Darius Davis had 5 for 101. I mean, he had the one long catch that led to a touchdown, but yeah.
Johnston is their best player and an NFL type of guy, and I don't think that he's as good as Marvin Harrison Jr., but he's up there. I mean, he's going to be a pretty high pick, and I think will be a success in the NFL, but to hold him to one catch was really good.
But, Mark, the biggest bowl margin of all time, any bowl game that's ever been played.
Most points that's ever been scored in a bowl game.
That's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, the Big 12's taking a beating for it too today as well. And a year that the Big 12 was good, like I said, there's no team in the Big 12 or really in many other conferences that is as good as Georgia was this year or last year. Ohio State was probably close to it on a good day. Maybe Alabama could play with them on a good day. Maybe, I don't know, Tennessee. I don't know who else. I mean, they did the same kind of thing to Oregon at the beginning of the year, and that game was also kind of similar where Oregon made some mistakes. But, no,
Mark,
I mean, it was a good year.
Did you see that the Big 12's number three team, though, did manage to finish number 25 in the AP poll this morning?
I didn't see that. No.
Texas. Texas, yes. That team that beat K-State, their champion at K-State, yes, they finished number 25, so I did win
the pizza. Congratulations.
Matt Meyer. Yes.
Man,
that was
I wonder
our
how
top 25 bet.
How close was it?
It was no, well, it wasn't close as far as points. Texas had like 90 something and the next was it Duke or whatever, someone with like 40 something. So it did not come down to like 5 or 10 points or a few points. I'd looked at it, and all these teams that were like 26 to 30 that could have moved up, they all lost their bowl games, and so I tried to identify, well, who could pass Texas? I really only thought they would drop maybe 3, maybe 4 at the most. They had to have 6 teams pass them to fall from 20 to 26, you know. And as it turned out, they were number 25. So it was the bet was handicapped properly.
It was a tight one.
But Texas got out. They had 95 points. Duke was next at 49. UTSA at 45. Air Force at 40. Boise State 38. Like I said, there just wasn't anyone else there. But yeah, the Big 12, I think they did deserve 3 in the top. That Texas team, I mean, they lost to the team that finished in Washington, finished number 8 in this poll. They lost to him by 7 points in a bowl game without their top 2 running backs or best defensive players. So, anyway.
Texas had a good season, I think, for them. The bowl game, I mean, it would have been better if they had won the bowl game, but they didn't. 9-4 looks better than 8-5. The bad loss was at Tech, and Tech may have been the most impressive team in the Big 12 in the bowl season. I mean, they just
Tech
smoked.
Didn't quite get into the, you know, Tech would have been, what, 26, 7, 8, 9, 30, 31. Tech finished 31. So in this final AP poll.
All right. So if you look going into next year, I saw some of these odds. Texas is going to be the favorite to win the league. And they are quite often, but I do believe it this year.
Well, that's another thing. Pat didn't want to hear anything about the way too early top 25 that Schlaball came out with on ESPN.
Hey, Pat, we need to get the fun police after Pat. I mean,
they had Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Michigan 3, Florida State at number 4 on the way too early top 25. They had Alabama 5, Penn State 6, USC at 7, LSU 8, Oregon 9, and Tennessee 10. What I was trying to tell Pat was, USC, I mean, this is no cakewalk for them in the Pac-12 next year with Oregon, Washington. You know, when they announced Penix was coming back, and that's what worried me on that bowl game, as soon as he said he's coming back, well, I knew he was going to play in the bowl game. But Washington, you look what Kalen DeBoer did this year with them. Here's a guy who won 3 NAIA championships, you know, Sioux Falls. I mean, no one cares about that, but this guy did a heck of a job with Washington. I'm just saying, Marcus, you take USC, Oregon, Washington, Utah was number 13 in this poll. That's 4 teams in the top 13 right there from the Pac-12.
I almost believe it when I see it. Washington has the friendliest schedule of all those teams.
And Oregon State at number 17, if you want to say 5 out of the top 17 there with if you throw Oregon State in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Texas was 16 in this poll. Texas was 16. K-State was 18.
I think K-State's got really a bunch to replace, a ton to replace. I don't know about K-State next year. That'd be a team I would say that's probably kind of looking at a little bit more of a down season.
Yeah. You know, Tulane, I mean, they had Texas Tech number 23 in this if you're looking for other, you know, Big 12 teams. But, no, it wasn't a good night, you know, for the Big 12 and, you know, and a bad finish just bowl-wise. But, again, that's, you know, I am about, you know, what you put into bowl games. I don't think you can just toss a conference out and say they had a terrible year just because they didn't play well in their bowl games. Bowl games are influenced by so many different things these days, you know.
Well, sure. I mean, and you don't want to blame the entire conference, you know, on the performance of one team. Like, again, do you want to base it on TCU's performance last week? You want to base it on their performance this week? Because last week's performance was really good.
Yeah. I mean, what does that say about the Big Ten? If you're, I mean, these people are just throwing the Big 12 out. Well, that was the Big 12. Well, where's the Big Ten? I mean, you had two opportunities to get there last week.
Right.
Ohio State, yeah, they did themselves well. They played a heck of a game. They still lost, and Michigan got beat by this TCU team. Think how Michigan feels this morning. But anyway, no, you can't do anything but give Georgia a whole heck of a lot of credit. Kirby Smart, Stetson Bennett. What do you think about Kirby Smart saying Stetson Bennett is the greatest dog of all time?
I think he was definitely caught up in the moment last night. Definitely caught up in the moment. But that's his guy. And back-to-back national championships, heard you guys talk about this earlier. You know, the last one to do it is A.J. McCarron.
Okay.
Back-to-back at Alabama. And there'd been a couple more on that list, but it's a pretty rare accomplishment.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Got some coaching news right there. I think it's probably, we talked about this on the air today? Yeah.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Oklahoma's got a wide receiver coach. Emmett Jones got hired today as the wide receiver coach off of the staff at Texas Tech. He had spent a couple of years at Texas, but spent most of his time in the Dallas area coaching high school football. So I think that's a pretty good move there. And he was the passing game coordinator at Tech. And so I think that's a pretty good move for
Emmett Jones.
Yes.
Is his name?
Yes.
Wide receiver coach. Okay. All right. Very nice. Speaking of portal news, and Pat talked about this a little at the end of the show, but the news came out yesterday that OSU had added Alan Bowman, the former Tech quarterback who had spent the last couple of years as a backup at Michigan. I didn't even realize he was up there. But what are your thoughts on that one, Mark?
Well, I saw it yesterday afternoon. I really didn't know what to think. I would have had the bar set a little higher than that for OSU. I don't know if that's it for them. Are they potentially looking at somebody else? They would have three quarterbacks in the room now. I guess it would be, or four if you would include Gunner. That is, I just, again, you know, he was injury prone while he was at Tech. He did have some good games, but was unable to even be the second string quarterback at Michigan. So I don't know. Must be something that they like in him, but I didn't think that or hear his name mentioned for many other schools. I know Cale Gundy's coming in today at 1 o'clock, and he's going to be here the entire hour. So we'll talk to him, and he said he does want to get into some of the portal stuff with OU and OSU. So we'll get his thoughts on Bowman as a quarterback.
Yeah, they got Rangel, Gunnar Gundy, obviously, that were there, and then the incoming freshman, Zane Flores, from Nebraska there. Anything else portal-wise grab your attention? Spencer Sanders, Marcus, I mean, any thoughts on where he might end up?
Auburn is what everyone thinks.
Okay. All right.
But I'm not sure. I think clearly there's some NIL stuff going on with him. I think trying to find a good deal, or maybe what the best deal that's possible for him to get. So I think that's one of the things that we're waiting on, or potentially he would decide.
Okay. What else? What else is on your mind?
One other breaking news item a little bit is that Carlos Correa is not going to play with the Mets. He's going back to the Twins. this season, and what a wild story that was.
So 6 years. So he's going to the Twins for 6 year, $200 million, according to Jeff Passan. And Matt, you were talking about this during the break. Now, the previous contract, which, again, they said they got out of it because of medical reasons, right? Now, this deal, he says, has a vesting option that can max out at $270 million. It is pending the physical again. So I guess even this thing is not totally finalized yet. But, Matt, the previous deals were for over $300 million, but they were for more years, right?
This is now only going to be six. So there's got to be – do we know what the medical issue is that everybody is worried about?
I'm trying to – they said, but I shouldn't say without having it in front of me, Matt, but I
– Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember what it was.
I'm trying to remember the details on what his injury was, but yeah, it's just an unusual deal to be, you know, connected to that many teams in one off season.
It's his leg. I think a lot of this is kind of Scott Boros, you know, planned. I don't know. So it's very odd. There's way more going on behind the scenes, and I don't think the injury is that significant. But man, he lost $100 million in all of that.
Susan Slusser, I believe I'm saying that right, of the San Francisco Chronicle, she's covered baseball for a long time. I'm reading this. Reports Correa's back actually wasn't an issue that was flagged during the medical. She's put out there, this was back in December, does not have a back issue.
Yeah, I think it's a ruse, man.
Yeah, Mark, you've talked about that. Yeah. So his deal with the Giants was 13 for 350. His deal with the Mets was 12 for 315. So, you know.
350 to 315 and now down to 300.
Yeah.
Now, it's only 6 years, but like you said, Marcus, this you got to make the money right now. You make, you know, because there's no guarantee that he's going to be able to, 6 years from now, cash in big time like this. So.
I'm reading this. I don't know who this is. Let's see, is this, I don't know who this is, but ankle injury Correa suffered in the minor leagues in 2014 that scared the Giants off.
That's the real thing. But I think, again, I think this is like a Scott Boros disaster, or maybe he had some remorse for signing with the, I'm not sure what it is, but it's the strangest thing I've seen.
Yeah, really weird. So for now, he's a Minnesota Twin, in theory. Check back next week when he becomes a Seattle Mariner. For 4 years and 185 or whatever.
Hey, Marcus, one other story that we discussed earlier today involved Reggie Bush. I mean, they came out yesterday with the 18 players that were elected to the College Football Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. and Reggie Bush is on that list. Of course, he had his Heisman vacated because of NCAA violations. But I have no problem with Reggie Bush going into the College Football Hall of Fame. Do you, Marcus?
I don't. Nope. I do not. It's you know, again, I'm sure not the only player, even if you go back years and years and years and years, that would have been receiving improper benefits on that. So no, he deserved it. He's one of the best players to ever play college football.
Yeah, you got players today that would have to take a cut and pay to take what Reggie Bush got at USC.
No, I don't know. He was on a pretty high scale
for his family.
He was on a fairly high salary there, I think, at the time.
I know he was on a fairly high salary, included houses and so forth, but I'm just saying, I mean, if you're talking some guys cashing in to the tune of millions today, I don't even think Reggie Bush was making that much back in the day. But along those same lines, like Tressel, he was elected in 2015 after he was forced to resign. They said, you know, he was charged with misleading NCAA investigators. Eric Dickerson waited decades, finally went in 2021, Marcus, all right?
That is beyond belief. I mean, that's crazy.
And he was never found to have broken NCAA rules. Now, he was associated with SMU, which was shut down back in the mid-'80s for violations, and we know that he, you know, in fact did probably receive quite a bit at SMU, but they never, you know, could prove it. At least he's not accused of breaking any NCAA rules, and he had to wait all the way till 2021 to get into the College Football Hall of Fame. which is not that tough to get into, right? I mean,
it's a long time. That's what's one of the tough things about the College Football Hall of Fame is that they've skipped over a lot of guys that deserve to be in. You know, they can only put so many in every class, but they need to go in. Like Roy Williams just went in this year. I mean, how is he not in the College Football Hall of Fame?
That's crazy. That is crazy. And we do say they put a lot of people in there, but there's just so many more schools. I mean, NFL, I mean, there's only 32 teams or whatever. And yeah, it's a hard Hall of Fame to get into. But the College Football Hall of Fame, you're right, Marcus, they should have a lot more because there's far more schools.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
OU and OSU on the road up in Kansas, going against teams that are each 14-1 and a perfect 3-0 in conference. Talking about Kansas K-State tonight, Marcus. Of course, we talk about it all the time. OU has not won at Kansas since 1993. It has now officially been 30 years since OU won at Kansas. Could it happen tonight, Mark?
No, probably not. I don't think it can happen tonight. I'll tell you what could happen tonight, because the smart money is steaming all over OSU tonight at Kansas State. And I think for this reason, you know, K-State's last two games are really outliers for them on their schedule, like as far as points scored and offensive production and everything that they do. And OSU is really good on defense. Now, I have no idea how Oklahoma State's going to score, but if K-State is going to play ambivalent on defense, which it seems they did a little bit, right, in the games at Baylor and Texas, then OSU, it'll be easier for them to win that game tonight. So that line opened up, and it's gone down to 4.5. The total opened up at 138.5, is down to 135.5. So I think that I've got faith in Oklahoma State, not hitting baskets, but I definitely have faith in them as a defensive team of being able to slow Kansas State down some tonight. And it's a huge game for OSU, man. They're in the bottom tier of the league for me with OU, OSU, maybe West Virginia and Tech. Anytime you can beat a top tier team in the league on the road, someplace else like that, you give yourself a whole lot better chance. And then, you know, I think at some point in time, you know, OSU fans, if they're frustrated with a football team, I mean, what are they with a basketball team? And that's got to get better.
Are they paying attention?
Tram did a great piece this morning, guys. I don't know if you saw it on, you know, the offensive struggles of the OSU basketball team. But he said Cowboys have scored 67 points in each of their first two conference games. They lost to Kansas by two, 69-67. They beat West Virginia 67-60. But then the other day, OSU had more turnovers, 18, than baskets, 14. They went 11 minutes and 22 seconds, spanning halftime, without a field goal. It's hard to go 11 minutes and 20, almost 11 and a half minutes without a field goal, during which they made 7 foul shots during that time. Then OSU goes the final 8:20 without a basket, during which they made 2 foul shots. The last stretch, they committed 3 turnovers, missed all 8 shots, and missed 3 foul shots. It's just hard to be that bad offensively and win a basketball game. But the other thing Tram pointed out, Marcus, he said through 15 conference games, 9 of them have been decided by 3 points or less, 2 in overtime, 2 by 1 point, 3 by 2 points, and 2 by 3 points. You know, so these teams are very closely matched in the Big 12 this year.
The way that line's moving, Mark, makes you wonder if Cisse will be back tonight. I don't know the answer to that, but
I would think they need him. And then I think also, too, is that I don't get it. I don't understand. OSU is not good in the half court, and they seem bound and determined to play half-court basketball. If Kansas State wants to run up and down the floor tonight, Oklahoma State's really athletic. I think they can score in transition. And when the floor is broken down, you're going to get some good looks from three. They just don't. There's a lot of dribbling. There's not a lot of ball movement. There's not very good spacing in the half-court offense. I mean, it's really easy to see. That's why, I mean, I love Mike Boynton. I love his personality as a coach. I love his ability to recruit. But what – how can he not see that the offense needs to be fixed? I don't know. It's out there every. It's out there every time they play.
He talked about the fact that what you just talked about, the ability to create your own shot and so forth. He said Porter Moser credited downhill basketball players able and willing to attack the basket. And he said Milos Juzon, Grant Sherfield, Bijan Cortez, even Jalen Hill, hybrid, you know, who plays most any position, talking about Hill, but said these guys, at least they get downhill. I don't know about all these guys having the ability just to create their own shot against a really good defender. We've talked about how Iowa State locked down Grant Sherfield. Bijan Cortez can break down the defense. I don't know if he's going to finish all the time, but at least he can break it down and create something, and that's what Juzon did the other day, right, Marcus?
Yeah, I think he's got potential. He's a really good athlete. That can really help Oklahoma. They need more athletes. They need more of what Oklahoma State has. I think tonight's going to be tough. Kansas is so good. OU just doesn't have, I think, the players to match up to cover their individual skill with Wilson and Dick on the wing, and that's just, it's going to be tough. But, you know, OU's been pretty good on defense this year and played well in Lawrence last year.
And the Tech-Iowa State game, you got an 0-3 Tech going up against a 3-0 Iowa State. What are your thoughts on Iowa State, one of the three different 3-0 teams? Kansas, K-State, and Iowa State are the undefeated teams.
Well, I love Iowa State. I just think that they are they're well-coached. They play great defense. They're I think, the best combination in the conference of offense and defense. Now, Kansas, to me, is better than they are offensively quite a bit, but Iowa State can, I think they can win in a half court game. I think they can win if the game goes up tempo. And I like them to win that game tonight.
So nationally, Kansas number two, Houston has taken over the number one spot. As we talked about last week, they won at Cincinnati on Saturday, Purdue won at Penn State. On Houston beating Cincinnati and Purdue, beat Penn State over the weekend. So it goes Houston 1, Kansas 2, Purdue 3 right now. Alabama's in the 4 spot. They won at Houston. That's Houston's only loss there, Marcus. Texas is 10, K-State 11, Iowa State 14, TCU 17 right now, Big 12-wise.
Great league. Tonight will be fun. Should be some good games. But I would expect Oklahoma State to be competitive tonight in this game against K-State. And it'd be they've already had the play really well and lose game to Kansas. So this is one that playing really well and losing is not going to help a bunch.
Yep. And the Thunder, as you heard Gideon say during the break, OKC at Miami tonight. That's a TNT game tonight, folks. Thunder, national TV game, 6:30 on TNT. Phoenix Golden State is the nightcap on TNT tonight, 9 o'clock on TNT. But the Thunder also back in action tonight.
No, Marcus, hero, no Adebayo for the Heat tonight.
Okay, well, yeah, Thunder might have a shot to pull off a road win.
Thunder about to find themselves in somewhere near sixth place.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time.
Yep.
Excuse me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.